Well, good morning. This is Barry O'Dell with the Church of Christ at Mammoth Spring Facebook page. It is Monday morning, March 25th, 2024. I hope everybody's doing all right today. We're in Isaiah chapter 28. Isaiah chapter 28. Good morning, Connie. Good to see you. Of course, we're live here on the church page, and we are cross-posted onto the nearchurches.com Facebook page as well. You can comment or ask questions on either one of those pages. And then once the live stream is over, I'll upload this video to our YouTube channel and to our Podbean podcast channel, where you can just listen to the audio instead of having to look at me. All right, so we are, like I said, in Isaiah chapter 28. Got folks joining on, Lyle, Debbie, Gail, Anna, good to see all of you on here, and others. We have several who watch and don't comment, and that's perfectly fine. We're going to slow down a little bit today. My plan is to cover two chapters, 28 and 29. Really, from chapters 28 to 33 of Isaiah, you have an intense focus. I mean, you do really for the remainder of the book, but chapters 28 to 33, you have an intense focus on the judgment that's coming upon God's people, Israel. We have to remember when this is written. Not many years prior to Assyria coming in and invading northern Israel and taking them captive. And so a lot of your prophecies are dealing with this. Thank you, Debbie, for sharing. So chapters 28 to 33, you have, and I'll just highlight it here, woe, W-O-E, six woes against Ephraim, it's northern Israel, and Jerusalem. That is a reference to southern Israel or the tribe of Judah. So we will note those as we go through the text. They're in chapters 28, 29, 30, 31, and 33. There's not one in chapter 32. But we're just, like I said, my plan today is to just cover chapters 28 and 29 because it really sets the, it helps us understand what's going on. Let's say you're sitting down doing your daily Bible reading and you're reading through the books of Kings and Chronicles. This really, you know, reading what we're reading here in Isaiah, a lot of it's written during that time, and it gives us a more well-rounded understanding of the books of Kings and Chronicles. Those books are mainly concerned with tracing the kings of both northern Israel and southern Israel and some of the events in the kingdom, and some of the events outside the kingdom, not just Israel and southern Israel, Judah, but even the surrounding kingdoms. But Isaiah gives us, as well as the other prophets, a better historical grasp. Everything that's going on in the background, particularly the moral and spiritual condition of the people of the day. So it's good to be able to date these books properly and to understand that when I'm reading Isaiah, the book, I'm also reading parts of Kings and Chronicles. All right, so I think sometimes we can lose sight of that, but I think it's good to be reminded of that. Hey, Melissa, good to see you. Janie, good to see you. There's Brian, good to see you. All right, let's get started. Isaiah chapter 28, and we'll start here in verse 1. Like I said, woe. That's a pronouncement of judgment, and it occurs six times from chapters 28 to 33. In particular, here in chapter 28, he's going to talk about this problem right here, the drunkards of Ephraim. Amos writes about this. Hosea writes about this. So in terms of the leaders, okay, the crown of pride, notice here in 28:1, the leaders of God's people are alcoholics. They like to drink. Again, Isaiah, Hosea, Amos, they all talk about this. Amos chapter 6, Hosea chapter 7, if you're interested in cross-referencing those, you can go over there and read those for yourself. But there is no good, when I think of this particular topic, there's no good that comes from consuming alcohol. Well, I like it. Yeah, well, good for you. That's a very selfish and short-sighted line of thinking that a lot of people have. Well, I like the way it tastes. I like the way it makes me feel. It helps me unwind. Well, that, when people, and I guess I'm kind of veering off course here, but not really, you know, when people make arguments like that, it tells you precisely what alcohol does to you, to your system. It's a depressant. It slows you down. Your mental faculties, your physical capabilities, everything slows down. I feel better. I'm relaxed. Well, that's what it's intended to do. It's intended to do just that. Slow you down a little bit mentally and physically. So, there's a passage that always comes to mind when I'm discussing this particular issue. It's over here in Leviticus chapter 10, and I believe it starts around verse 8. Yeah. So the first several verses of Leviticus chapter 10, you have the issue here of Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron. They offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. They're punished, etc. And then you have some other things that happen there. Then you get to verse 8. And I don't know that I can prove this 100%, you know, if I can be dogmatic about this, but I find it interesting that right after the Nadab and Abihu debacle, let's say, this is the very next thing you read. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, "Do not drink wine or intoxicating drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations." Why? Why were they forbidden from doing that? Now, this is specific. And some people will say, well, see, that's just talking to the priest when they serve in the temple. They can drink any other time they want to. You know, sometimes the best answer to give people is just, okay. Sometimes there's just no point in going back and forth, because the fact of the matter is, and this includes me, and it includes you, we're going to do what we want to do typically. But notice what it says here. Why were they forbidden from drinking intoxicating drink when they go into the tabernacle? That you may distinguish between the holy and unholy, between the clean and unclean, and that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them by the hand of Moses. Now, that's going to come into play, and the reason I wanted to chase this rabbit for a little bit is because this comes into play in Isaiah chapter 28 and 29 about the prophets and the priests and the leaders. They're drunk. They're not teaching people properly. They're abandoning their responsibilities. So I think that's significant right there in verse 10, Leviticus chapter 10 and verse 10, that you may distinguish between the holy and unholy, between the clean and the unclean. So let's get back to our text here, back to Isaiah 28. Woe to the crown of pride, the leaders of northern Israel, Ephraim, they're drunkards. Their beauty is fading. Verse 2, behold, the Lord has a mighty and strong one, like a tempest of hail and a destroying storm, like a flood of mighty waters overflowing, who will bring them down to the earth with his hand. That's a reference to the Assyrians and the destruction that they're going to bring upon God's people because of their sin. Hey, Susan, good to see you. The crown of pride, the drunkards of Ephraim, will be trampled underfoot. All the glory is like a fading fire. So it goes on to say that again. In that day, okay, when the Assyrians come and destroy God's people for their sin, the Lord of hosts will be for a crown of glory and a diadem of beauty to the remnant of his people. So again, and we've talked about this, the remnant. There are a faithful few in the nations of Israel, northern Israel, Ephraim, and southern Israel, Judah. They're concerned about God. They realize what's going to happen. They're listening to the prophets like Isaiah and Amos and Hosea. You have the remnant, all right? They turn to him. They don't turn to alcohol. They don't turn to anybody else for their strength and for deliverance. They turn to God. But a majority of the people didn't do that. In fact, verse 7, Isaiah 28, 7, but they also have erred through wine. Talking about, verse 6 here, I skipped over verse 6. For a spirit of justice to him who sits in judgment, and for strength to those who turn back at the battle gate. Well, God is that source of strength. But the people by and large have erred through wine, verse 7. And through intoxicating drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through intoxicating drink. They're swallowed up by wine. They're out of the way. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. And then the picture gets pretty gruesome, but accurate. See, that's the thing. It's not fun to think about or, you know, visualize, but it's accurate. So they're drinkers, pretty heavy drinkers. And so all their tables are full of vomit and filth. No place is clean. You know, walking into a drinking establishment, let's say, and people who are overdoing it, and, well, they're throwing up everywhere, and probably among other things that they can't hold in. And it's just a terrible picture. And this is describing God's people. Okay, so if that's the case, if that's how the leaders of God people are, leaders of God's people are handling themselves, well, who will teach knowledge? And whom will make to understand the message? Those just weaned from milk? Those just drawn from the breast? You're going to turn to babies to teach you? The leaders are drunk. So who's going to teach you? Because, well, there has to be teaching of the law, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. But the people who should be doing that, the prophets and the priests, are drunk and corrupt. So here's what God's going to do. For with stammering lips and another tongue, another language, he will speak to this people, to whom he said, this is the rest with which you may cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing, yet they would not hear. This people with another tongue, speaking to his people, to God's people in another language, that's the Assyrians. They wouldn't listen to his own prophets, to their own prophets. And so he's going to bring somebody in and punish them that they will listen to. That's a reference to the captivity. And even at that, so, and that's the thing about, as you read through the prophets and kings and chronicles, all these books, God's people go through some terrible things. And they're told why they're going through terrible things. And it's because they've deviated from what God wants them to be. So then they're brought into suffering, punishment, captivity, however you want to say it. And even then, Isaiah 28:13, notice what it says. But the word of the Lord was to them, precept upon precept, line upon line. They're just sick of it. It's a burden to them to hear what God has to say. They don't want to listen to the prophets. They'd rather listen to the lying prophets who say peace, peace, when there is no peace. And so, verses 14 and 15, you need to listen, you people who are in Jerusalem, the rulers specifically mentioned there, because you have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with Sheol we are in agreement. All right, so the idea here is, in Isaiah 28:14 and 15, they think that they have found some way to avoid God's judgment through the Assyrians. They've made some type of covenant with somebody. And we know, again, reading the prophets and the kings and chronicles, that when these difficult times came upon God's people, they would try to make political allies, whether it was with Egypt or Assyria. They would look to some other country to try to help them instead of God. And so perhaps that's what verse 15 is talking about. They've got something that they think will help them avoid what's coming from Assyria. God says, when the overflowing scourge passes through, well, this is what they're saying, it's not going to happen to us, for we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood we have hidden ourselves. That's where they are in their self-deluded state. It's not going to happen to us. We're too strong. We're God's people. All right, well, what does God have to say in terms of that? Well, I lay in Zion a stone for a foundation, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. Whoever believes will not act hastily. Now that's Isaiah 28:16. You could turn to 1 Peter chapter 2, and I think it's around 1 Peter 2, maybe verses 4 and 5, where this is applied to Christ, this precious cornerstone. Hey, Sheila, good to see you. It's applied to Jesus there, but here in Isaiah's context, it's about God. All right, so while these drunken leaders and these corrupt priests and prophets are looking for some other source of strength and deliverance, God says, I'm right here. I'm the one. And if you believe in me, you will not act hastily. You're not going to act in a way you might later regret. There's hope in the midst of chaos. The chaos is verses 1 to 15. These drunks throwing up everywhere, rejecting the prophecies. In the midst of all of that, and in the midst of Assyria invading the land, God offers peace. He offers security, a place of safety, a sure foundation, verse 16. When he does that, I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plummet. The hail will sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters will overflow the hiding place. You think you've made a covenant. Remember, we read back up there in verses 14 and 15. God's people believe they have a covenant whereby they can escape the punishment and captivity that's coming. says, no, you're going to be swept away. Your lies are going to be revealed for what they are. And your covenant with death will be annulled. Your agreement with Sheol will not stand. It's not going to be the way you think it's going to be. God, through Isaiah, is saying to his people. Then you get down here to verse 20. This is an interesting verse, Isaiah 28:20. For the bed is too short to stretch out on, and the covering so narrow that one cannot wrap himself in it. I don't know if you've ever been in a scenario like that. I was thinking about that as I was reading through the text, when I've ever been in a place trying to get rest, trying to sleep, and it's just, there's no comfort. Maybe you're too cold or too hot. And I've been in that situation, like in an airport, going from one place to another. I remember we were laid over. We were going on a mission trip. I don't remember what year it was, maybe 02 or 03, but it was me and my wife and her brother and his wife, and we got stuck in some airport. It was like 13 hours or something, and you're tired already because you're flying across the country, and you're waiting for a flight to take you over the Pacific, and it's just miserable. Well, so looking here at Isaiah chapter 28 and verse 20, Israel's plans to somehow avoid the punishment that's coming, to avoid the Assyrian judgment from the hand of God, there's no way to make good of their plans. All right, there's no way to avoid what's coming to them. And all of their covenants and agreements that we've been reading about are completely insufficient. It's like a bed that's too short and a blanket that's too small. There's no way. Well, why is that the case? Because, they're making plans. Well, why is it the case that it's completely insufficient? Well, because the Lord will rise up as at Mount Perazim, and he will be angry as in the valley of Gibeon. Now, if you want to read about those two historical events, you can read 2 Samuel 5. And this is in the lifetime of David, when David's fighting the Philistines and he's trying to establish his throne. 2 Samuel 5, it's like from verses 18 to the end of the chapter. And you can read about what happened with Mount Perazim and the Valley of Gibeon. As God acted then, so he's going to act now in Isaiah's day. What is it, 500-600 years later, approximately? That he may do his work, his awesome work, and bring to pass his act, his unusual act. That's interesting there in Isaiah 28:21. God's unusual act. Well, what's so unusual about what he's going to do? Well, he's punishing his own people. And he's told them about it. And they're refusing to do anything. So, you guys better pull yourselves together. Get ready. Because I've heard a word. Because I've heard from the Lord of hosts that a destruction is determined upon the whole earth. It's coming. And there's nothing you can do to avoid it. So then the prophet gives them a parable. From verses 23 down through verse 29. And it's a parable from agriculture. How a plowman, okay, a farmer, plowing all day to sow. He turns the soil, he breaks the clods, he gets everything ready, he levels the surface. Does he not sow black cumin and scatter the cumin, plant the wheat in rows? He gets the ground ready. He's got different types of seed that he's going to plant, so he prepares everything according to what he's going to plant. The barley in its appointed place and the spelt in its place. He's getting everything together to farm. And he does it based on his experience, his knowledge in raising crops. He instructs him in right judgment. His God teaches him. It's like this is according to the laws of nature. You know, going back to Genesis chapter 1, when God set in motion the laws of nature and reproduction and seed and things like this. Well, so not only does the farmer prepare the soil and plant the proper seeds at the proper time and the proper place, but then when he handles them after they're prepared, after they're ready to be harvested and things like this, he handles them properly then because he's done this before. The farmer knows what he's doing to get the best out of his crop. Okay? So what's the point? What's the point of this parable? This also comes from the Lord of hosts. Okay, everything you just read there about farming, verses 23 to 28, that comes from the Lord of hosts. Well, so does this judgment that's coming upon Israel. He is wonderful in counsel and excellent in guidance. All of the plans that Israel's made to avoid this, bed's too short, cover's too small, It's going to happen. And like the farmer prepares the soil, prepares the seed, he gets everything ready, God's people are prepared for judgment. Not in the sense of they're going to make it okay. It's in the sense of they're ripe for judgment. And God's going to do this according to His wonderful counsel. Verse 29. Chapter 29 continues, and you'll notice here, and if I'm not mistaken, I'm thinking about this. If I'm not mistaken, Isaiah is the only one who uses this word to reference God's people. It's this word Ariel. And it means, one of the meanings is the lioness of God. When you see a word in your Old Testament, typically, that ends in E-L, like Daniel, Ezekiel, Mishael, you see names like that, words like that, it has some meaning connected with God. So, Ariel, the lioness of God. This is talking about, obviously, Jerusalem, the city where David dwelt. So this continues the, as you can see here at the top, God's pronouncement of judgment upon Jerusalem, His people. Well, there will be heaviness and sorrow. So it's the same message continuing here into Isaiah chapter 29. I don't want to read all of these verses. Let me skip down here. I've got some things marked in the margin of my Bible here. Verse 6, Isaiah 29, 6, "You will be punished by the Lord of hosts with thunder and earthquake and great noise, with storm and tempest and the flame of devouring fire. The multitude of all nations will fight against God's people, Ariel." So this chapter continues the same message. Now, you get down to verse 9. This is an interesting, I thought we'd take some time here. Isaiah 29, 9, "Pause and wonder. Blind yourselves and be blind. They are drunk." So here's this idea again. They are drunk, but here he says not with wine. "They stagger, but not with intoxicating drink." Now he addressed that back in chapter 28. What's the problem here? "For the Lord has poured out on you the spirit of deep sleep. He has closed your eyes, namely the prophets." Okay, pay attention to that, the prophets. "And he has covered your head, namely the seers." Seers, another name for prophets in your Old Testament. Here's the problem. Here's what they're intoxicated with. Here's the issue. "The whole vision has become to you like the words of a book that is sealed." We read about this kind of thing. So books in their day, we know what books in our day look like. All right, you've got a binding, you've got different leaves, you know, different individual pages. A book in their day was a scroll, typically on some type of a rod, either wood or some type of metal rod. And the scroll is rolled up around it. And if you wanted a limited audience to read it, let's say, you would seal it with some type of wax and a ring, some type of imprint to show who it's from, and that this book, this scroll, is only for certain people. Daniel, the book of Revelation, you see this type of language about scrolls and seals and things like this. Well, Isaiah, his message to them is like a book that is sealed, which men deliver to one who is literate, okay, somebody who can read, somebody who's educated, and says, "Read this, please." And he says, "I can't because it's sealed." It's an excuse not to, it's got a seal on it, I don't want to open it. This man's fully capable of reading, and it's delivered to him, which implies this is for you to read. And he says, "No, it's sealed, I don't want to read it." Well, okay, so then the book is delivered to one who is illiterate, saying, "Read this, please." And he says, "I can't. I don't know how to read." This is the problem. This goes back up to verse 9, why God's people are drunk but not with wine. They stagger but not with intoxicating drink. They're drunk and staggering over themselves. And all classes of people. Again, both literate and illiterate. They all refused. Okay? Now this is a passage that we're familiar with. The literate refused to read it. The illiterate refuses to read it. And so, here's his response to that. "Inasmuch as these people draw near to me with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me." This is where, so this passage is quoted in your New Testament, Matthew 13, Mark chapter 4, and it's applied to the parables that Jesus taught. These people who claim to be the Jews, they claim to be God's chosen people. "We are Abraham's seed," you know, all of that good stuff. And yet they have a history of rejecting the God of Abraham, and all those prophets. They say they're God's people. They honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men. That makes me think of Matthew 15. When Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, he said, "You full well you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your own traditions. Therefore, behold, I will do a marvelous work among this people, a marvelous work and a wonder. For the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hidden." They're going to answer for their stubbornness. You have the next woe in Isaiah 29 and verse 15. Well, the pronouncement of judgment or warning here is against people who try to hide their counsel from the Lord. Here's what they say. They're doing their deeds in the dark, and they say, "Who sees us and who knows us? Surely you have things turned around. Shall the potter be esteemed as the clay? For shall the thing made say of him who made it, 'He did not make me'? Or shall the thing forged say of him who formed it, shall the thing formed say of him who formed it, 'He has no understanding'?" Do you really think that you can hide your plans, your intentions from God? Well, they did. And this is a rebuke to them. No, you can't hide your plans from God. And the fact of the matter is, that's true for us too. I think of James chapter 4, verses 13 to 17. Those who leave God out of their plans. What is your life? It's even a vapor. James 4:16. What you ought to say is, "If the Lord wills, we will do this or that." Don't leave God out of your plans. That's what Israel did, and they're punished for that. Now, beginning in verse 17, is it not yet a very little while till Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful field be esteemed as a forest? Okay, they're getting ready to be burned to the ground, essentially, by Assyria, by God's judgment. But there's going to be a time of restoration. Verse 19 here. The humble also shall increase their joy in the Lord, and the poor among men shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. Again, the leaders, the prophets, the priests, all of those people have refused to listen, but the humble don't. They turn to God. Now, the terrible one is brought to nothing, the scornful one is consumed, and all who watch for iniquity are cut off. All right, so there are consequences, obviously, to rejecting God. But then you get down here to verse 22. And the prophet here, this is where the chapter ends and where we'll stop today, but brings up some history. The Lord who redeemed Abraham concerning the house of Jacob. Goes all the way back, makes a connection all the way back to Abraham. Concerning the people of his day, the house of Jacob. Jacob shall not now be ashamed, nor shall his face grow pale, but when he sees his children, his descendants, the work of my hands, notice that's capitalized in verse 23, the work of my hands in his midst, they will hallow my name. So, again, this is one of those passages in Isaiah that you've got the prophecy of doom and destruction from Assyria, but then in the midst of that, you've got a message of hope to the faithful, to the humble that we read just a few verses ago. What was that, verse 19? Yeah, verse 19. So, it's going to be bad. All right, judgment's coming. But in the future, all right, when he sees his children, a thing that God has accomplished, they're going to hallow God's name, the Holy One of Jacob. They're going to fear the God of Israel. These also who erred in spirit will come to understanding, and those who complained will learn doctrine. They're going to repent. Sadly, it's going to take Assyria. It's going to take a lot of death and suffering and captivity and, just a lot of suffering. They're going to have to learn the hard way. But they're going to learn, and in time they're going to repent. So let's stop there for today, because as you can see here in chapter 30 and verse 1, we have the next woe, and I don't want to get into that yet. All right, guys, good to see you back here today. And the plan is tomorrow, Tuesday, we'll come back and we'll start in Isaiah chapter 30. Don't see any questions or comments, just good to see all of you. And appreciate you listening. So I hope you have a good day, and hope to see you back in here tomorrow at 11 o'clock.